Teaching Up Nutrition with licensed nutritionist Darlene Kvist. Each week, Darlene explains the connection between what you eat and how you feel. Stay tuned to hear practical, real-life solutions for healthier living through good nutrition. Dishing Up Nutrition is brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestone.
Well, welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition. I'm Darlene Kvist, licensed nutritionist. And I thank all of you for listening today. You know, we're looking at the role nutrition plays in the recovery from chemical dependency and how nutrition is key in preventing relapse. Our co-host today is Christina Swigert. She's a licensed nutritionist with a master's degree in nutrition. She's also had about 5 years of experience helping people feel better through nutrition. Hi, Christina.
Hello, Dar. Good afternoon. And we also want to welcome with us today Carol Ackley, and she is the director of the River Ridge Treatment Centers that are located in Minnetonka and Burnsville. And these are two outpatient treatment centers, and she has recently opened a new resident treatment for women in Burnsville. And we are happy to say that she is using a strong nutritional approach to helping these women rebalance while in treatment.
And we are very happy about that.
Yes, because we know it makes a huge difference. So, Carol, adding the support of nutrition to the treatment is really leading edge. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about how you became interested in providing this nutritional program and what really made you believe or understand that nutrition would make such a big difference for your patients.
Hi, Carol.
Hi, Dar. Hi, Christy.
Hello.
When I was beginning to understand the brain chemistry imbalances that addiction causes, I also began to understand that having good brain health is important in recovering from a brain disease like addiction, and that a big part of good brain health is about eating right. And I also realized in my own brain and body that balancing blood sugar was key to stabilizing moods for me. And mood swings for me were about cravings. And so if I could keep all that stable, I had fewer cravings, and that usually means less relapse.
And so you just took that information that you had personally, and you moved it right into helping other people with that information, didn't you?
Yep, with a lot of help from people like you and experts in the field of nutrition and brain health to sort of do a cross-disciplinary thing, because we now know, and it's widely accepted, that addiction is a brain disease.
And I think that's even new concept, new thought for a lot of people that are listening to our show today. They don't realize that it is really a brain disease.
Yep.
Let's just say that one more time, Carol, because you said it so nicely.
Yep. Addiction is a brain disease. It's a brain chemistry imbalance that no one chooses to have. People choose to use a chemical or choose to not use a chemical, but nobody chooses to become addicted to it. That's a biochemical process that no one in our society is immune from, but some people are very vulnerable to it. And one of the vulnerabilities is in having poor nutrition, because you don't have what it takes to feel good naturally. And so you turn to chemicals to feel good.
Yes, right. And it just keeps going around and around, doesn't it?
Yep, vicious cycle.
Yep. You know, I think everyone knows that alcohol and drugs are very hard on the body. You know, but did people really realize that alcohol is a poison to the body? Mm-hmm. And, you know, after months or years of drinking or drugging or whatever you want to call it, you know, the brain really becomes very deficient in a lot of nutrients.
Right. And these nutritional deficiencies are a key piece that need to be looked at. And unfortunately, I think a lot of times it's not even talked about, or people aren't told that they can do something about it. And sometimes for some addicts, these nutritional deficiencies are there before they even start using chemicals. And I think that's partly where you, Carol, were saying how some people are more vulnerable. They start out with these deficiencies, then they start using to kind of counteract these deficiencies, which then leads to years of abuse where these deficiencies are even more pronounced.
Yep, it becomes a vicious cycle. And this is especially true for young people who start using before their brains are fully developed. And the brain learns to wire with the chemicals in there. And that can have foundational problems in long-term brain health. So prevention work with young people is really critical, as is good nutrition, so yeah, that right. they feel good enough that they can say no to chemicals.
Right.
Yeah, it's all so key. Mm-hmm. You know, I think sometimes, once you get someone that's really chemically dependent, they just operate from such a denial system.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't even understand that the damage that they're doing to their body or brain. Don't you see that, Carol? I mean, they don't really understand when they're doing the alcohol or the drugs that they're really doing that much damage. Or are they just in such denial that they pretend they don't see it?
Well, both of those things are true. But what happens in addiction is that the priorities of the brain change.
Hmm.
And because you don't have any more of your own natural feel-good chemicals like dopamine and serotonin,
mm-hmm.
you have to have the drug to feel good. And so the drug becomes the priority.
Right.
And
so,
the same kind of energy and money and time that used to go into those other things that made you feel good now get more focused on the chemicals. So in addiction, using makes sense.
Yes, right.
To the yeah. brain.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't care whether the brain doesn't say, well, yeah, but the liver is getting damaged.
Right, right. Just feed me what I want.
Well, the central nervous system is getting damaged. It
yep.
doesn't matter. The brain says, give me that chemical that's going to make me feel good.
That's right. That's going to make me, because the brain interprets it as needed for survival.
Right.
So
right.
if you think of all the things people, do if they're starving to death, in order to survive, that's the same way a chemically dependent brain approaches the need for the chemical. So when someone like me comes in and says, oh, no, you don't need that chemical, their brain says, yeah, right.
Right.
Because at first it doesn't understand. Now, with recovery and stabilization, the frontal cortex that can rationalize and understand things can figure out all of this.
Right.
But initially, that's not the part of the brain that's running the show.
Right. So they're not thinking about just the damage, the decreased oxygen that their brain, which is starving it really by not giving it oxygen. But then, all these different symptoms that come along or, hallucinations, the emotional disturbances, seizures, different neurological disorders, blackouts, memory loss, that alcohol or the drugs or the chemicals they're using are directly harming the brain cells and causing all those problems.
Yep. And some people have some chemical imbalances to begin with,
mm-hmm.
like depression or ADD, ADHD, or bipolar disorder, mm-hmm. and they start using chemicals to sort of self-medicate. They develop addictive disease. They go into treatment and stop using the chemicals, but they still have those underlying disorders that now kick up again.
Right.
By the same token, some people start using chemicals and create emotional imbalances like depression and panic disorders. Although usually when they stop using the chemicals, those other symptoms go away too. So it's complex.
So actually what you're saying is, Carol, some of these psychiatric disorders that a person might actually start with, like the depression and the bipolar and all those, they have them before, but then some people develop those things as they're using, right?
Yep, can go both ways.
Okay. So, I think the other thing that people they really need to realize is sometimes, and we see this a lot of times when people are coming in for nutritional counseling, is that they've ruined their immune system too through this process, mm-hmm. because they've used a lot and they've actually depleted their body of some major minerals, and so they have, one of the things when I'm teaching, I see this all the time, they have acne all over their face because they have depleted their body of zinc mainly, and they're seeing, their immune system. But a lot of times then you also see really chronic bronchitis and all that stuff too.
Well, and most mood-altering chemicals adversely affect your appetite. So people are nutritionally deficient. The exception, of course, to that is pot, which is an appetite enhancer. But most people who are smoking pot recreationally don't go in the refrigerator and pull out a head of broccoli and eat it.
Right.
Most of them are eating processed and junk food, too. So there is major nutritional deficiency here in early recovery.
Well, I know we know that one of the deficiencies is zinc, because you actually need an enzyme in your liver to digest the protein to get the zinc out. And when you're low on zinc, then you have more skin issues and you have a more immune system issues. But there's a lot of other deficiencies that can occur too. And I know, one of the things that we were talking about before we went on the show is that when we're working with some people that have been pot smokers, especially women, been pot smokers for a long time, I often see those people and they have fibromyalgia or they have, chronic aches and pains all over. And that's kind of an interesting thing.
Well, pot definitely clogs up the immune system because THC is a fat-soluble chemical, and your white blood cells, which is your immune system, are mostly lipid fatty membrane. And so when you're smoking pot, your immune system can't work very well. And, of course, anytime you smoke anything, cigarettes, pot, crack, crystal meth, you're affecting your lungs. Pot tends to carry a bacteria on the plant, which can create chronic respiratory problems because your lungs are the perfect environment for growing bacteria. So there's numerous things.
So say that again, Carol, because I think that was kind of new information for me because I didn't realize that.
Right.
Marijuana actually does what?
Marijuana is stored in the lipid fatty membrane tissue in your body because it's fat soluble. And that is mostly your brain cells, your white blood cells, your reproductive organs, and your liver, all of which are fairly important parts of your body. And then the pot plant tends to carry this bacteria on it that can, once it settles in your lungs, becomes a chronic issue.
Well, then it becomes an interesting fact, and it makes so much sense when we see people that have smoked pot for 20 years having some of these chronic conditions.
Right, the fibromyalgia often. We know it is a bacterial connection for a lot of people, so that's an interesting new piece of information.
So do we have callers already?
We do have a caller on the line.
Well, let's take a caller.
Hi, it looks like we've got Joe Mary, is that right?
Yeah.
Hi,
yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, I happened to just turn on the radio and heard this crazy thing about, associating good nutrition with a healthy recovery.
Really?
Isn't that crazy, And of course, it's some women that are talking about it to me. But I don't have an opinion or anything. I'm a woman in recovery, and I went through a pretty standard treatment program because that's what my insurance paid for. But I was a big fat drunk is what I was, and smoked a lot of dope. But on the outside, and it was how I hid my addiction. I was what everybody thought was a really healthy person. And I was a trainer and it's just crazy, but it was how I hid my addiction for so long. Mm. But when I, was in treatment, people were saying, I have never smoked so much and drank so much coffee in my entire life. And, two of the worst things you can possibly do. And then there was no addressing of the physical body.
Let me have Carol talk about her new treatment center that she has for women, because I think it's based on one of the things it's based on is good food and good nutrition.
Right.
So
right.
Can she kind of answer your question about how she's approaching this whole idea?
And just to say, I'm finally, clean and sober for 4 years now, and
that's great.
A huge piece of that is my yoga practice, which is a very physical practice, but it's I think that's the other piece of recovery that needs to really be so loud and clear, is that you can't separate even though this is a disorder of the brain and all of that, but just the hell that you put your body through, and that it's so important that you take good care of your body.
That's really true, and I think the yoga is a wonderful piece because yoga helps with stress, and stress is the main cause of relapse.
Well, what yoga teaches me is it helps me understand that concept of practice. That's why it's called yoga practice. You practice it every day, and so it helps me understand that I have to practice being happy. I have to practice being well. I have to practice being sober.
Yeah.
You know, and it's about making that conscious choice to do that. And the other thing that it does is it teaches you how to be present. It teaches you how to stay in your body. And those of us who are addicts, you know, we don't live in our body.
Right.
So you know
it's
what?
Not a nice place to live. It's not a nice place to live.
So will you stay? Would you stay? Keep your radio on because we have to actually take a break. But you know, keep your radio on because we're going to talk more about how some of the nutritional aspects might even help you have better sobriety as you move along. You've got some great things going.
Right. So it is time for a short break, and you are listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, and we are discussing the role nutrition plays in the recovery from alcoholism and drug addiction. And if anyone else has questions, feel free to call us at 651-641-1071.
As you know, sobriety requires commitment, hard work, and support. You may know this personally or from the experience of someone close to you. However, you may not realize the importance of nutrition for sobriety. When you change your nutrition, you change the biochemistry of your brain, which creates new thought patterns. In effect, your biochemistry works with and for you. Leaders in the field of chemical dependency know that by eating the right food, you experience less depression and anxiety and fewer cravings. You think more clearly, sleep better, and feel comfortable in your own skin. A balanced breakfast of bacon, eggs, and hash browns is a great way to start your day. The experienced staff at Nutritional Weight and Wellness has helped hundreds of people maintain a comfortable sobriety by addressing the biochemical causes of addiction. Whether you are in recovery or have been sober for years, certain foods are essential to balance your brain chemistry and support your mood. To learn more about consultations to support sobriety, call Nutritional Weight and Wellness at 651-699-3438 or visit their website at weightandwellness.com.
There was a man back in 95 whose heart ran out of summers, but before he died, I asked him, wait, what's the sense in life? Come over me, come over me.
Well, welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. I'm Darlene Kavis, licensed nutritionist, and I'm here with Christina Swigert, licensed nutritionist, and Carol Ackley, director of the River Ridge Treatment Centers in Burnsville and Minnetonka. And we are discussing the nutritional needs of people that are in recovery and for people that are in long-term sobriety. And we had a question, a caller, didn't we, Christina?
Right. Somebody who couldn't stay on the line was wanting us to talk about what foods are more addictive and how we can really use nutrition to come over, address these food addictions.
Well, I think we have to say sugar, don't we?
Yes. And I think something that people don't always realize is that biochemically, sugar reacts very much the same as drugs and alcohol do in our brain. A little, not quite as strong, but the biochemical actions are almost identical.
And that alcohol is, in fact, fermented sugar.
Right. So there we go.
So, you know, when we stop and think about how much sugar people are consuming, and this is the thing that shocks people, is that we are consuming about 135 pounds of sugar every year.
Right.
Which, you know, if it breaks down into 53 teaspoons of sugar a day, and we don't eat hardly any sugar, so somebody's eating our share.
Exactly.
But, you know, just think about that. And if we're, and one of the things that I read recently is that young boys are drinking 3.5 cans of Coke or Pepsi or one of those Mountain Dews every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that that is giving them at least 30 to 40 teaspoons of sugar just there.
Right.
So, you know, do we have any question about this?
No, and I think one of the things that happens very often, and our previous caller talked about this too, is that people in early recovery often turn to sugar in more than what they used before to try and stabilize their brain chemistry, when in fact the opposite is what's going to happen, because using sugar creates blood sugar instabilities. And that's, for the most part, what mood swings and irritability is about.
Right.
And people who are using a lot of sugar in early recovery really struggle with irritability, sleeplessness, mood swings. And if being sober doesn't feel better, people aren't going to stay there.
Right.
So the key to long-term sobriety is to feel better. And one of the best ways to do that is to try and eliminate sugar from your diet as quickly as you can in early sobriety and replace it with protein and other whole foods.
I know when I'm teaching that sobriety class for, you know, nutrition for sobriety, one of the things that I try to encourage people to do is to start their day with a great breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And it always surprises people what I recommend. And I think just the last commercial that was on, we recommend like eggs and bacon and maybe a little bit of hash brown, some vegetables, some real food. And what that's going to do is help to balance and stabilize that blood sugar versus what else might they have sometimes. I mean, Carol, what would be a typical thing that people would be eating when they would come in?
Coffee, donuts, and cigarettes is pretty much breakfast. Coffee, cigarettes, and junk food for lunch. Coffee, cigarettes, and a donut for snack. Coffee, cigarettes, and maybe something healthy for dinner.
Sure.
And Christina, how would that end up making you feel if you were actually eating that kind of menu?
Oh, terrible. I don't think I could get through the day.
I would be very depressed. I know that.
And just, well, then you just feel terrible and you want to eat more sugar. I think that's what ends up happening.
And that goes back to that whole question before, you know, the caller, that what is addictive as far as is sugar again?
Yeah.
We go back to that whole thing again.
Right.
And that's the nature of addiction, too. You start out at a certain level and you eat or do sugar or do a chemical and you feel temporarily better, but then you nosedive lower than when you started. So now you need more of it.
Right.
And it starts this snowballing effect that towards the end of the day, you're eating sugar or doing your drug or whatever, and you're not even getting back to normal anymore, much less feeling any pleasure.
Right.
And there are people who live for days like that.
Right.
Right, yes.
Well, it's already time for us to take another break. So if you even have a family member struggling with alcoholism or drug addiction and you have a question for Carol, Dar, or myself, please give us a call at 651-641-1071.
You are listening to Dishing Up Nutrition. You know, alcohol depletes the body and brain of many minerals such as zinc and magnesium, which can, it really can increase anxiety and acne. And when you're deficient in either one of these minerals, and it can increase the risk of getting viral infections all the time. So right. We have tons of callers,
we do.
Don't we?
And actually, we have callers on those exact topics. So
okay.
Let's maybe get to, it looks like Nomia or Nomia. Is that right?
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for calling. What was your question for us today?
Yeah. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate that a lot. My question is about sugar addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Me and my friends, we always want to know what is it that we crave so much chocolate. And, you know, a group of us did, we balance meals, we go for walk every day, and we try to keep in a pretty balanced life.
Mm-hmm.
And but we still crave so much chocolate, so we could not pinpoint to what it is. What is it's hormonal? What is it? And I think for a majority of my friends, we really consider it as an addiction for us.
Right.
Because it's like, you know, we cannot live without chocolate, especially.
Sure.
So I'm just wondering if that is, you know, something else that we could look for that we should add in, you know, into our diet or.
Sure. Well, a key mineral that usually people are deficient in when they crave chocolate is actually magnesium. And chocolate has magnesium in it, and it's very common for women to be low in magnesium, especially. And something that happens, too, is a lot of times people are low in magnesium, so they get a little bit more anxious, they don't sleep as well, and sometimes those types of things even make those cravings worse, so then it's like you kind of, it keeps getting worse and worse.
And actually, our body gets a little bit more depleted of magnesium just before a period.
Yes.
So that is often why people, actually crave more magnesium just before their cycle.
Right.
And so But, it, you know what, maybe for some people it takes a lot of magnesium. It
right.
maybe takes 400 to 800 milligrams of magnesium to actually get rid of that craving. And
right.
so that's level one at least. And Carol?
And chocolate is not all that bad for you, depending on what kind of chocolate you eat. If you eat, and I'm speaking from experience here, if you eat dark chocolate, it actually has antioxidants in it and does have some calming as well as stimulating benefits, and has less sugar than milk chocolate or some of the really processed chocolate. So if you eat really good dark chocolate on a moderate level,
right,
it's not about a lot of sugar, and for some women it can really help them over the edge of PMS.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I mean, you know, so there's many ways to look at this.
Right.
So sometimes chocolate says sugar though, and so it depends on what kind of chocolate you're really craving. If you're craving the dark chocolate,
yeah,
you know, maybe then you are craving, you know, the chocolate, but maybe if you're craving like a milk chocolate, maybe you're craving sugar.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Looks like we've only got one more on there right now. Some people maybe had to go. Should we
go ahead
and take that question? Hi, Elaine. Thanks for calling. Elaine?
Yes.
Hi. You're on the show. Thanks for calling.
I have some questions I'm really intrigued with. People who are in recovery and the young people that really crave the Mountain Dew and the cigarette, that connection of high anxiety and increased acne.
Right.
So I'm very interested in whether it's best to take a multivitamin to get those minerals such as zinc, and now you were talking about the magnesium connection in craving chocolates.
So just maybe looking at some ways to address starting to overcome some of those cravings and anxiety. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I'm around several young people who are in early recovery. And
okay. You know, one of the things that I would say is let's start feeding the meat, because all those minerals come from meat.
Okay.
So we say, where's the beef?
Right.
You know, get the beef back in. Get them to eat meat, you know, several times a day.
Right.
We say 3, 4, 5 times a day, eat meat.
Mm-hmm.
So you get that meat and vegetables and good fat back into their diet, and that and getting them to drink just lots and lots of water, because sometimes they're dehydrated and they're looking for, you know, just liquid, basically. And so it's a habit. They grab a Mountain Dew.
And Mountain Dew, of all the pops, with the exception of some of the new high energy drinks, which are really have dangerous amounts of caffeine and ephedrine in them, but Mountain Dew has the most caffeine of all the chemicals.
Right.
And people get caffeine addictions very easily, including young people. And so if you're eating the protein that you should on a regular basis throughout the day, you'll have energy, so you'll be less drawn to needing caffeine. But I think, you know, to be realistic, in our society, pop machines are everywhere in kids' lives. And it's probably the single most damaging thing that we're doing to our young people and our old people, ourselves.
Carol,
somebody
else is saying that exactly.
Right.
There's no nutritional value, and the havoc that it's wreaking on people's pancreas, as well as setting their brains up for addictive tendencies, I think we're seeing in the numbers.
Sure.
So if people can stop using anything, my choice would be soda pop.
Yes, I agree.
Me too.
Yep. Wonderful.
Great. That was said wonderfully. Well, it's time for a short break. And
already?
Yes. fast. We are discussing nutrition to prevent addiction and nutrition that will help you maintain sobriety. So call us with questions at 651-641-1071.
Looking for a speaker for your next meeting, conference, or education hour? How about a topic that affects your audience both professionally and personally? Health and nutrition resonate on many levels because all of us want to look and feel our best. Nutrition educators from Nutritional Weight and Wellness address groups of all sizes on topics varying from Nutrition 101 to increasing metabolism, balancing moods, hormonal health, and restful sleep. Presentations range from 1 hour to full-day seminars and can be tailored to your group's interests. What can you expect? Sound information with real-life examples, making the topic accessible and relevant to your group. Motivating, interactive presentation styles that engage the audience. Handouts and takeaway strategies for practical application and ongoing impact. Nutritional Weight and Wellness delivers information that makes a difference in people's lives by changing the way people think about food. Enthusiastic audience responses often result in return appearances to explore other topics. Call 651-699-3438 to learn more about booking a nutrition educator for your next meeting or event. 651-699-3438.
Well, you are listening to Dishing Up Nutrition. A couple of things that I learned as I was kind of preparing for this show is that the frontal lobe of our brain, and that's right behind your forehead, enables us to project what the consequences of our actions might be. You know, our frontal lobes are very critical for responsible decision making. They give us the ability to empathize. An early use of alcohol or drugs impairs and disrupts the growth and maturation of our frontal lobes, and because those are not fully mature until we're well into our 20s. So we can see why we are on the show today. We're talking about prevention,
right?
And nutrition is key for that, and we're trying to get in and let people understand that if people start to use, they need to get into treatment early, right, Carol?
That's right. Like any disease, the sooner you catch it, the easier it is to treat.
Right. And I know, Carol, that we've helped you set up some menu plans to really work on this nutritional aspect at your residential treatment centers. And we really base it on balanced eating. So each time a meal or snack is served, I know it will contain some protein, some vegetables or fruit, and a healthy fat.
And again, we based it on balancing blood sugars because we understand that that is so critical. And you, I mean, we've talked about that several times already on the show. And, you know, so how's it working for you?
Well, I think the women in the residential program notice very quickly within days of not using their drugs of choice and in getting rehydrated, which is also important, and good nutrition, that they start to have some mood stability. Their irritability levels go down. They can think and focus a little bit better. They can sleep better, and we all know how much better we feel when we can sleep better. And if you feel better in sobriety, you're much more likely to stay there. It also allows their brains to learn the new skills they're going to need to learn to lower stress in their lives and to cope with the stressors that come up in all of our lives without having cravings to use. The women also learn how to cook this way for themselves and their families so that when they leave treatment, they can continue to feel well because they're eating right, and they're helping their kids, who are genetically susceptible to addiction, do some preventative work because now their kids' brains will be working better and their kids will feel better.
Yeah, and I think it, I mean, I'm sure everyone that has an addiction problem wants it to stop with this generation.
Yep, they do.
And, you know, nutrition, I think, is the one key element for prevention. Of course, we would think that, wouldn't we?
Well, it's also something that resonates with people because we all eat. We have to eat to stay alive. So it's a subject that's near and dear to our hearts and brains. It's also fairly simple to make adjustments in your food. You don't have to have health insurance to do it. You don't have to find a psychiatrist to do it. These are things that we can make and change just by learning what we need, shopping differently, cooking differently.
And, you know, it's almost going into treatment at your treatment center is almost like going into a spa, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if the women there would call it a spa. They work pretty hard. But as far as learning to feel better and learning how to nurture themselves, yes, they very much learn how to do that.
And they're eating. Oh, so, well, you know, we got good food. We know it is balanced. Do they like the taste of it?
They love the taste of it, and they very rarely complain about wanting their sugar in their snacks and their pop.
Oh.
Number one, they never feel hungry. And number two, their brains are working better and they feel better and they know why.
Right. And I think that's key. You know, teaching, I think that education is so powerful because, and we talk about this in our classes, as adults, if we don't know why these changes are important and can't experience them, why are we going to do it? You know, so educating about that along with all the other things. And you were talking earlier about you guys do some special things to have really good eggs. I thought that was kind of
fun. We do. I have a girlfriend who has chickens, and she's also in recovery, and she has decided to supply the eggs, which the women eat at least once a day, with flax seed or flax meal, which increases the omega-3s. So the women in our treatment center get super customized eggs for good brain health.
And it's putting all that great DHA, which is the brain fat, right into their brain every morning. Yep.
Which decreases the addictions.
Yep.
So. And it also heals the cellular wall in the brain, which is what's been damaged by the addiction.
That's great. All right. Well, break time. So you are listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, and nutrition for sobriety is our topic today. And we've got a couple more questions we can cover when we get back, and we will be back shortly.
Does your nutrition knowledge come from the back of a cereal box? If it does, that may explain why you aren't getting the health results you seek. More people are struggling with metabolism, fatigue, pain, diabetes, heart disease, and cancer than ever before. If you haven't made the connection between what you eat and your health risks, it's time you do. Where do you start? With nutrition education that explains how to eat real, whole foods in balance for better health today and tomorrow. Nutritional Weight and Wellness teaches sound, research-based nutrition in a fun, interactive style. Want to balance your moods? Increase focus and energy? Attend Balanced Food for Balanced Moods. Seeking relief for achy joints and sore muscles? Try Foods to Reduce Pain and Inflammation. They have another popular class called Jumpstart Your Metabolism. Classes are offered in community ed programs throughout the metro area. Nutritional Weight and Wellness also teaches more in-depth classes and the signature Weight and Wellness series at their offices in St. Paul, Wayzata, and White Bear Lake. For more information, call 651-699-3438 or log on to weightandwellness.com.
Well, welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. And I really want to take this opportunity to thank our special guest, Carol Ackley. She is the director of the River Ridge Treatment Centers in Burnsville and Minnetonka. And she, I thank you very much, Carol, for coming, sharing your knowledge. And you have just lots of knowledge, and you've got a lot of commitment to helping people recover from alcohol and drug addiction. And I know how many hours you work. So, Carol, if people want to find you, I know they're going to have questions after the show. So how can they find you?
We do a lot of public education, too. We speak in a lot of schools and to a lot of public health and all sorts of places. So we do a lot of training. Our main intake number is 952-894-7722. And that number can route you to hopefully answer any question you might have.
And if people, you know, if you miss the number, we'll have it at our office. And our office number is 651-699-3438. And also, I have some good news for people because lots of times they want to listen to our shows, but they weren't able to tune in. And now Corey has several of our shows up on our website. And so I'm sure by Monday he'll have this show up on the website. And all you have to do is go to weightandwellness.com. And you just click on a radio show, and you can just tune in and listen to our shows. And so I think he has six of them up on the website now, and that's kind of neat for people.
Yes, and no commercials.
No commercials.
All right, and I would like to alert any parents or grandparents that are interested or concerned about their children's nutrition or their grandchildren's nutrition to tune in next week. And we are going to be talking with Dr. Fred Pescatore. He's an MD. And the author of Feed Your Kids Well. And he actually is also going to be in town doing a seminar on May 15th from 6:30 to 9 at the Sofitel in Minneapolis. So if you want to register for that class, you can call 1-800-332-2351. And he has a very active private practice in New York. And he's very passionate about teaching parents how to feed their kids.
And the things he's teaching is what we're talking about too, right now. And he's deadly on diet, on any kind of pop, So I know we've got a couple of callers, Christina.
Right.
So.
Looks like we can talk to Rhonda. She's been holding for a while. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And what was your question today?
My question is, my husband recently completed treatment for alcoholism, and I've noticed since he's been home in the evenings, particularly when typically he would have drank, he is eating popsicles like crazy.
Sure.
And I'm wondering where that stems from. And I had thought sugar, but he did specifically ask me to buy sugar-free ones. So I'm wondering if there's any harm in that. And also, what are, say, top three easy things I could do to help him with his sobriety as far as nutrition goes?
This is a very common thing in early recovery. And the sugar-free popsicles may not be sugar-free. There are some replacement chemicals in there that actually biochemically are very similar to sugar.
Sure.
But his brain remembers what it used to do in the evening, and now it's not doing it anymore, and so it's craving this. Protein in the evening will be critical for his dinner, so any way that you can get him to eat meat right away at dinner will help in the evening.
Okay.
Having another protein snack before he goes to bed versus sugar. Here's the crazy part of sugar. Every time you eat sugar, you've set up the craving to want more sugar. So once you stop eating sugar, you won't crave it anymore. Now, it doesn't happen instantly, but there's a lot of sugar in alcohol, and alcoholics' bodies get used to that. But if he could eat dark chocolate, like we talked about before, and focus on protein, maybe nuts for a snack.
Or maybe a protein shake.
Maybe with some dark chocolate in it, to satisfy him without setting up the sugar craving, which can ultimately lead to a relapse. So it's good that he's doing non-sugar, but it isn't always non-sugar. And if he could do some protein instead, he'd be really moving towards healing his brain and his chemistry.
Yeah, I've actually made popsicles out of our protein smoothie for my daughter, so maybe that would be a great idea for him. The recipe's on our website.
And just a quick question on the protein shake. Typically, I make it with kefir.
Okay.
Okay, kefir, as long as it's plain and it's not the strawberry kind.
Yep, it's plain.
That should be fine. And then always use a whey protein powder.
Yep.
And fruit. And fat.
Cream or coconut milk or something in there.
Or an avocado all kinds of things like that.
Oh, well, thank you so much. This was very helpful.
And I just want to congratulate both of you. Recovery is a family affair, and the fact that you guys are doing this together will hopefully be really beneficial for your relationship as well.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. Wow, the time went really fast,
didn't it,
today? And remember, the magic within you is the food that you eat. Thank you for joining us today. I love you. All is groovy.